What does the judge want? What does the greater audience want? And what do I want? And somewhere in the middle, you know, if you focus on finding that overlap, all the other decisions tend to come out in the wash. Welcome, Jim. Good morning.
Morning.
I have not morning, changed Andrew. Clothes since last week. But you have, so well done.
Not even leave it, hasn't even left the dungeon, the Piper's Dojo dungeon since last week. That's how dedicated this man is to piping education.
Well, the truth of the matter is it gets kind of chilly in here this time of year. So this, I always just leave this one here.
Smart. You know? I understand that.
Yep. It's a wonderful world we live in. So we're talking about medley construction today. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah. I wondered what you might say about this, Andrew, because I'm sure that you have way more experience building medleys than I do, whether that's for a band or for soloists.
I do
and,
have
you know,
a,
we're kind of...
I do have a fair bit of experience building medleys, and it's like, it's like a definite hobby of mine. Like one of the things I love about playing in Inverary, especially now that I've gotten to know everyone in the band, you know, so the first couple of years, maybe not so much, but then you start to get some ideas and you start to get involved in the thought process behind the medleys. And that's a lot of fun. I really enjoy that. I first started doing that with Terry Lee in the SFU Pipe Band back in the early 2000s and really got the bug for, you know, especially with a band of that level, the sky's sort of the limit. So then
right,
you can try lots of wild and crazy things. So yeah, so it's something I enjoy doing.
Yeah, that's where you can pull off those cool like reprises of the first tune at the end of the medley and stuff like that. Great crazy harmonies, having somebody come in with the beginning of the jig while others are still holding on to the ending of the slow air, that kind of cool stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but you know, but also you don't have to do that.
Yeah, I'm probably jumping ahead here. Like maybe we start with the basics first, right?
Yeah, well, also you don't have to do that. I feel like, yeah. Well, let's get into it, Jim. Set us up.
Yeah. Well, the last time that I built a medley, it has been years now, but I thought that it was important to have like consistency from tune to tune. And I mean like consistency of key, you know, not have a key change in between or anything like that. I now think I was wrong. Or maybe there's different ways to do this. And I wonder, too, if it's changed over time, if maybe that used to be more the thing and it became less the thing over time. But it was actually the great Ross Miller himself who suggested once, like, I think he like went all the way to saying you should always have a key change, you know, because it keeps things interesting, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is, and maybe he was being hyperbolic on purpose because he knew where I was coming from, thinking that it needed to all be consistently the same, you know.
Yeah.
But if I may, should we use an MSR maybe as an example? Because it's a simple three-tune thing.
That would be a good way to get our beaks wet, yes, I think.
Yeah, let's get our beaks wet with that. So when I'm picking an MSR, like thinking about the tunes, do you feel like you just start by thinking about the march, like how do we get into the circle and all this kind of stuff? Or do you go, which is the most difficult tune in the medley? Let's start with that one. Or what's the strategy for like just getting started? I know I need to build an MSR for this year. Where do I start?
Yeah, an MSR is a great place to start because it's very simple and the options are quite limited, actually. When it gets down to it. So, and then, so this can be a good way to start. I actually don't start in any of those places, Jim.
How do you start?
Okay, so I start way more zoomed out. Okay, and actually it probably goes all the way back to what MSRs have I heard that I really liked? And I think that's sort of the goal. Like, so I start with what the goal is going to be. And when you're playing in a pipe band that's competing, you really have two possible directions you can go. Maybe there's more. I'm thinking off the cuff here, but there's really two directions you can go. Number one is I want to impress the judges. Right. So you can go, the competitive angle is the first way you can go. Okay. What MSR is going to give me the best odds of winning?
Yeah.
Cool. Making sense. That's the first thing you could think about. The other thing you could think about is the audience that's standing around listening. So maybe, instead of trying to please the judges, maybe you could just please the audience. What's going to make the audience cheer? I suppose the final, or maybe another direction you could go is, I don't care about either of those, and I just want to do something that I like.
Yeah, pipers just want to have fun.
Yeah, and then maybe now we're constructing, maybe we have three bubbles in our Venn diagram, okay? And maybe what we want to find is the solution in the middle. So maybe where what the judge wants to hear, what the typical audience member wants to hear, and then what you enjoy playing should all come together. And then in the middle of that is going to guide what I choose to play.
Yeah.
By the way, I may have accidentally just come up with something really brilliant there. Yeah. So, and then maybe there's other bubbles, but anyway, you want to be where the bubbles converge. Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're playing an MSR, okay, so we could think about those three things. You know, what are the judges going to like? Well, we got to make sure that the material we play is playable for the members of our band and that we'll be able to execute it well and we'll be able to tick all the competitive checkboxes. Okay. And then the next bubble might be, what is the standard audience member going to like? And that's to me something where, okay, well, we're going to want the melody to be easily accessible to the common person, and we're going to want it to be in a friendly key, and we're going to want the tempos to, you know, to be up there and kind of exciting, and so on and so forth. And then the third one would be what we like to play. So if you just don't like the tune at all, you might not want to pick it, even though it might satisfy the judges and it might satisfy the audience. If you hate it, it's probably not a good pick. So you got to find something that you like to play. We'll just use those three bubbles for today. And so like in there is going to be, you know, what you pick. Now, you were mentioning the key changes, right? So should you change keys? Well, if you don't change keys, the judges might not enjoy your performance as much as if you did change keys. But then also the standard audience member, I won't call them uneducated necessarily, but the standard audience member, they too are probably going to enjoy. Yeah, they too are probably going to enjoy a little key change. And then you might enjoy a key change as well. So that seems like something you probably want to do. Maybe as a general guideline, we want to include key changes.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you don't understand what a key change is, that's okay too. Like you don't have to be a music theoretical physicist in order to understand key changes. It's just like the basic notes that tunes utilize, you know, you want to change it up. So some tunes are sort of dark, low A based tunes. Some of them are happy tunes that sort of revolve around the note D. Maybe sometimes you get, you know, dark tunes that revolve around the note B. But anyway, you kind of want to mix that up. You want to mix that up so you have different flavors coming through in the MSR. But that's how you would go about maybe starting the process.
Yeah. So would you, do you feel like when you, maybe we'd have to get tune specific for this, but I would personally, I'm very curious to know if there's any hot tips for transitions between those tunes. Of course, there's a lot of ways you could do that. But thinking about me as I'm a typical, you know, I'm going to be playing with a grade four band, you know, so maybe not too fancy. Like, where would I start with a transition? Is it just, well, hold that last note for three beats and then start the next tune? Is it as simple as that?
You could do that. But again, let the big picture guide your decision-making there. So you could try doing breaks in different ways, okay? And then you would want to pick the break that ticks as many of the strategic Venn diagram checkboxes.
Oh, those same,
you can. Same ones. So
that makes sense.
Now, the judge might really enjoy a two-beat break that's very clean and there's no mistakes. But maybe that's kind of boring. Maybe I don't really enjoy that as much as just going straight into it on the next beat and, you know, the smooth operator break. Strass Bay, like the reel starts on the next Strass Bay beat. I find that kind of exciting, kind of like, oh, nice. And then if you could pull it off really well, the judge even might actually like that quite a bit as well. So there's a lot to be gained by doing your break in that way, if that's what you value. But maybe you want to lean a little bit more towards conservatism on the breaks, making sure that it's very technically clean, because maybe the main thing you'd like to take away from your performance is the gold medal. You want to win that blue ribbon.
Yeah.
So maybe you're a little bit more conservative, but, and that's okay. That's these little decisions that you make are what's going to make your band or your own performance unique, right? So it's all up to you.
I feel like it's maybe it's just me that needs this reminder, but it's like on that Venn diagram, when we're talking about what will please the judge, maybe like an overriding, important, overarching kind of idea there is, can it be done well?
Of course.
Like the main thing.
Go
dial it down to simpler to make sure you can really do it well, rather than going, well, this is pushing the envelope for complexity for my group. If you want to please the judge, do something you can do really well.
Yeah.
Whereas the please the audience and the please yourself, that might be requesting, as you're making decisions, a little more complexity to make it interesting and fun in the sense of balancing these things.
Exactly. So when somebody like Ross, hey, Ross, maybe you're out there listening. Hey, hope you're well. Somebody like Ross who says you should always have key change. And first of all, I don't know if Ross would say that, but it might, that might be a good general practice. But the word always is probably not true. You know, sometimes
it probably was in response to my like zeal for never having a key change. He was probably trying to shake me up, to be totally fair. And I'd like to imagine that he is listening. And it's while a very fancy barber is tending to his very fancy beard that he likes to sit back on a weekly basis for his beard appointment and listen to the Piper's Dojo. But carry on, Andrew.
Yeah, like another one is you never want to end a medley, or you never want to, you know, end up on the note D on a really long D, right? You never want to do that because the D is unstable and the blowing is going to be too difficult to do. And so I sort of agree with it as a guideline. But then never say never, because maybe by taking that risk, you can achieve something really cool. Like maybe the medley really does need to end on that note. And so you just do it. And then you just try and get the blowing as good as you can get. And so like a lot of times it's worth the risk. And it all has to do with sort of balancing that out. So that's what it
Making
is for me.
Sense, yeah.
Zoom out and think about it from the big picture there. What am I trying to achieve here? I think those three things I mentioned are pretty close to the three that most people would want to balance when they're performing. What does the judge want? What does the standard audience member want? And then what do I want? And then you kind of want to pick stuff where all of that converges.
What about harmonies, Andrew? Is there a level at which my group needs to be playing before I introduce harmonies? Because I'm a guy who loves harmonies. Like I like to hear them. I love to play them.
So that goes in the what you want bubble.
I always want harmonies.
Yeah. So that goes in the what you want bubble, isn't it? So it's like my band gets excited to play harmonies. I personally like playing harmonies. I like writing harmonies. So that's like harmonies are strongly in the what I would love bubble. Mm-hmm. Making sense? Now, let's say you're a beginner band. So how much harmony does the judge want? And the answer there is the judge maybe wants a little bit sprinkled in here and there. The judge probably doesn't want a whole lot though. Because, you know, at the beginner level, we're looking for, you know, the judge is probably looking for us to do the basics really well. And a little bit of harmony probably fits into that, but a lot of harmony probably not. So we might want to tone down the amount of harmonies that we would personally love to benefit our, you know, competitive aspirations. So maybe, you know, be a little bit more conservative there. And then if we're thinking about what the audience would want, I think that the audience probably wants something in between, you know, like the audience probably likes a little bit of harmony, but they probably don't want as much as bagpipe nerds want it. Like for whatever reason, it's just, you know, let's play those harmonies. That's what we want. So again, from the zoomed out perspective, you know, you want to pick your battles. Inverary, as any connoisseur of grade one pipe bands will tell you, we're always in that situation. You know, we always start off with tons of wild and crazy harmonies. And then inevitably, as the season goes on, for lack of a better term, you have to kill the darlings, you know, and you kind of have to carve away at it, and you have to pick what you really want, because judges and audience members will express, yikes, a little busy there, boys.
Couldn't find the melody.
Yeah, couldn't quite figure out what you're trying to do. And remember, you have your bias because you're in the trenches every single day. You're practicing it. So you can hear how the complicated harmonies are supposed to fit in, but that will typically go over the head of someone who's hearing it for the first time. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Where harmonies are concerned, you know, there's no rule, but we do have those three things that we're trying to achieve, let's say, and we need to balance what we're going to do with our harmonies across that.
Like gut reaction, Andrew, like from the hip, what would you say to a person, say, if I'm hypothetically setting up a medley for my grade four band, and I know that I have a new player who has understandably still a hard time with both physical and mental blowing anomalies on the top hand, especially.
Yep.
And so I strategize and I say, you know what, I'm going to write in a bottom hand harmony and I'm going to put that player on that harmony.
Yeah.
Is that bad practice on my part? Is that good practice? How do you feel hearing that?
I would say it depends. It might be something where every now and then that turns out to be the perfect thing to do. Where it's like, all right, I have this little bit at the end of the medley, and some of the bits are like super fancy, but only 6 out of my 10 guys can handle it. So maybe they're going to do that, and then I'm going to put the less capable ones on the harmonies just for that little segment. I get it. It would work. I think more typically we want to pick material that, you know, even our lowest common denominators, for a lack of a better term, that even they can handle.
Mm-hmm. I am charmed by the idea of just being cool with just, we're going to do Scotland the Brave, but we're going to do it so well that even those of us who have been playing a long time will enjoy playing it.
Now, let me ask you this.
It's a lovely idea.
Let me ask you this, though. Going back to our, because I'm familiar with this idea. So going back to our three Venn diagrams, how much does the judge want to hear Scotland the Brave?
Oh, fair enough. Maybe the judge
isn't too excited about that. Probably 0%. Probably 0%. Now, that's Scotland the Brave is in a special category, though, and like in the fact that it's probably just really overplayed. We hear it 47 times every time we go out to the games, right?
Right. So I could have said maybe better to say Barren Rocks or Green Hills or some other fairly common white Scotland Brave.
Green Hills,
not Green Hills, though.
Barren Rocks, maybe. You know, like
what else do we have? 42nd Highlanders. What are some other common?
But even
options?
42nd, that might be a little bit better. Another tune that comes to mind is like, how about the Old Rustic Bridge?
Oh yeah, you know? Old Rustic.
Like Bridge. That's a classic 2/4. It's not like a mass band's tune that sort of makes you want to scratch at your eyeballs if you've been piping for a long time. Now, if you're brand new pipers, don't misunderstand me. These are great tunes. And they're going to be a huge part of your life. But then after a while, it's kind of like when you listen to the radio and you're like, oh, what do you know? Taylor Swift. You know what I mean? It can have that kind of effect. So if you're trying to please a judge, by the way, I love, like, one of my secret ingredients, if there is such a thing, when I'm doing a medley, nostalgia is a secret ingredient. If you can
I've heard of this.
If you can figure out how to make the judge feel nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's like when you get the fireballs in Super Mario, right? If you can figure out how to get the judge to feel the feels, to feel the nostalgia, that's a good thing. That's why you'll often hear really great medleys incorporating some of these nostalgic tunes in some way, right?
Yeah.
Is because nostalgia is like bass boost. It's going to, you know, it gets you extra points.
Yeah.
And by the way, no one, I don't care who they are, no one can stop you. Once they've accidentally felt the feels, you know, you will get a boost, right? If you can get them, that's secret ingredient. So now, is Scotland the Brave nostalgic? No, because it's overplayed. But is something like the Old Rustic Bridge nostalgic? It's an interesting thought. Because, you know, sure, maybe that tune has been played quite a few times, but not so much, but not so much, and certainly not so much lately. So now a judge hears this tune, blast from the past, played on modern tone with some thoughtful harmonies, and suddenly, that band opened up their medley. Instead of a fancy hornpipe, they opened up on Old Rustic Bridge, and suddenly you caught them something a little unexpected, something a little nostalgic, and then to Jim's earlier question, with the right kind of harmonies, you know, if you can pull that off, you get the bonus points, which is cool. It's a fun game to play, right? And by the way, I think the nostalgia thing, that can work at any level, not just grade one, you know, instead of doing something wild and crazy and freaky, try and hit them in the feels.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely something you're looking for.
So then, Andrew, like, at what point, if you're the person or one of the people who's working on this medley, at what point does it need to be done? Like, can you keep messing with a medley right up until competition day, or is that bad practice? Should you be able to hand the tunes as they're going to be in the order they'll be to your bandmates and not mess with their heads after that?
That's a great question, and it's really just, it just tends to be really hard to do. It's really hard to give your band the medley in September and not change it. And that's just like the way that it is. I think what you're probably realistically shooting for is the main key ingredients are given to the band as soon as reasonably possible. And then those ingredients need to be kind of like road tested. So what a lot of bands
this
will
kind
do
of back and forth. Game,
yeah. What a lot of bands will end up doing is you take something that you were playing in a concert that the crowds really enjoyed. And then, you know, a year or two later, it ends up in a medley because you know it works. And though, even though it might not be super exciting because people have played it for a while, at least it's road tested and you know that it works. I think you see that
that's
a lot.
Cool. I never really thought. It makes a lot of sense. It's like your concert repertoire can become your testing ground for future medleys. That's, I think that's a fun way to think about it.
It's why they. It's why all they do now is remake old movies. Because
it's
because you know it works.
You know it works, yeah.
We know Spider-Man works. We know people love Spider-Man. So I'm not going to make a new superhero. I'm just going to make a new Spider-Man movie because I know it works.
Yeah.
And the same thing can be true in the pipe band. It's like, well, we played this medley last year, but the judges didn't love the opener. So what we're going to do is we're just going to switch out the opener to this tune. We know it works. And we're going to put, you know, this old medley in, and there you go. Voila. Especially for a band that is particularly concerned with competitive success, and they're favoring that bubble and the Venn diagram, those strategies really work. And that's why you'll hear bands go back to classic medleys that they played in the past, maybe make a couple little modernization tweaks, but then they'll just play that because they know it works. People are going to love it. And then for me, I don't love that because I'm always concerned with the, what will I enjoy playing bubble? And also I feel it does a disservice to your fans to at least a small degree when you just recycle old stuff, but never say never. Sometimes that can be exactly the right thing to do.
Yeah. Do you feel like, Andrew, it's always worth, like, thinking of the, your, like the band, you know, your typical mid-grade competition band, is it always worth coming up with the money to pay a professional to help you with your drum scores, with your harmonies, et cetera? Or is that kind of lower down on the list of priorities for, you know, bands are always strapped for cash.
I'm not sure about hiring, but I think it's always, always, even at high levels, even in the grade one level, it's always worth finding mentorship.
So maybe even in the local scene, maybe if you're, even if you're not reaching out to an Ed Best and Andrew Douglas, you know, maybe you just have another band that's a few towns over and they have a, maybe a pipe sergeant who's been playing for a long time. Maybe you just reach out to them and say, hey, you know, could you look this over or something like that? Some kind of mentorship.
Exactly. Mentorship is good. And sometimes hiring them is the right thing to do. So it's like, hey, Ed Best, what do you think about this drum score I just wrote for my drum corps? Ed's going to be like, I would recommend 197 changes. And then you're like, oh, well, option A, I can try and make the 197 changes. Or maybe the right thing to do in that situation would have been to just ask Ed or hire Ed, let's say, to write the scores for you. Because Ed is going to be able to balance a lot of those things, like what's appropriate for your constituents, what the judge wants to hear. And that experience is probably worth every penny. However, what do you lose when you do that? You lose the sort of, you lose a big part of the creative process when you do that.
So
I'm not a proponent of just definitively always outsourcing your scores to someone else, because then you're not learning the creative process, right? You're skipping it. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to play music if there's no creative process. So there needs to be at least a little bit of creativity in there somewhere, I would say. And then the same goes for pipe bands. Maybe you arrange a medley. I actually just finished yesterday doing a bunch of harmonies for a band where they will yearly sort of usually call me up and say, hey, we got a couple tunes. Can you write something for us? And that's how they like to do it. But then there might be other groups with a couple of music theory inclined people that like to write their own harmonies for stuff. And I think that's really cool. And then in that case, similar to a drum score, it would be probably a good idea to make a recording of the band or something and send it around to some people that really know their stuff. And they might be able to give you some feedback like, whoa, cowboy, those harmonies are way too overpowering. The harmonies are good, but there's just way too much, you know, not quite as much, that kind of thing. Which, by the way,
Andrew,
you're gonna get that feedback anyway in the competitive arena. You're gonna get the judges will tell you that. But it would certainly be nice to eliminate the errors as much as reasonably possible before you hit the competition field with your set.
Certainly. Yeah. Refine it as much as you can before you get there.
Yeah.
Now, like, if somebody wanted to, oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say something, which is, I personally feel like the Inverary, we did the chanter stop thing.
Yes.
I personally feel like there was nowhere near the bang for the buck there that was worth it. So the cost benefit analysis of that chanter stop is nowhere near worth it. The judges were like, hey, cool chanter stop, guys. But it wasn't like people weren't
no
really.
No extra points though, huh?
Yeah. Like, what? And you might hope for that maybe a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So we're doing something, and what you're going for there in the competitive Venn diagram bubble, what you're going for is for judges to hear something really virtuosic and reward you for it. And that didn't really happen. Now, the crowd, the audience thought it was great. So in that bubble,
I was just going to say, in that audience part, that was cool. Yeah.
And but meanwhile, Jim, in the third bubble, the enjoyment of my own, like preparing for it, let's say, I freaking hated it. It caused a ton of stress, you know, and quite a bit of practice on just that one thing, which, remember, you're not being rewarded for really competitively, as it turns out, but it takes tons of practice. And I remember, you know, like 2 days before the Worlds, practicing it, and there was a chanter sound during the stop, and it was like, oh, my God. You know,
pretty
it was
stressful.
Just so the bang for the buck, the cost benefit analysis there, totally not worth it. And that's one man's opinion. And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn there. Like, I'm not sure other people in the band would agree with me, but just for me, I just remember thinking.
Sure, maybe someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I just remember thinking it was a cool experiment, but I'm not sure I would want to, you know, do it again in another medley.
That's really interesting to me as like an outsider to know that, just because, you know, of course, I don't have any insight into the personal experience of the preparation and the stress that goes into making that happen. I am an audience member. I wasn't a judge. So as far as that Venn diagram goes, I occupy one of those three circles. And so for me, that was cool. It was worth it to me.
No,
you know, I'm glad you did it. So
I personally feel like Inverary is a band that really values that audience Venn diagram bubble.
Yeah.
We also really value whether or not we enjoy playing the material. And so that in my, you know, the way I vibe, that's super satisfying for me. It's just really fun. So obviously we love being competitive. We love trying to win and stuff, but I feel like it's a well-balanced diet there. And it's not, we're not too hyper-focused on absolutely the fact that we really must try to win this every time. I mean, we always are trying to win it, but it's, I think we're trying to win with style maybe or something. I don't know. Or win with fun. Mm-hmm. Win with maximum fun also or something. So that makes it, at least in my, that's just my view on it, makes it really fun.
There's maybe something of value there. There are plenty of adages or sayings or something, you know, about do something you love and the excitement and love that you have for it will shine through or something like that.
So something like that, yeah.
Prioritizing that you enjoy it.
There is, I've won cool prizes a few times. And it is really fun. Really fun.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. Like super fun to win. Super fun. It's great. So I understand and respect the argument that if you're going to play in a grade one band, what you should be trying to do is win that thing. Totally. And there might even be, you know, and I might be not in line with how the rest of the band feels there. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was trying to get real smooth about putting in a plug for learning how to write harmonies and stuff like that via dojo membership. I was trying to plug that at some point in there and I've lost it now. So now I'm just going to say, this is, instead of subliminal advertising, this is liminal, extra liminal advertising.
Yeah. Extra liminal.
Hey, go join the dojo.
Post liminal?
Yeah, that's right. Super liminal.
Yeah, we do occasionally talk about, you know, writing harmonies and stuff. I mean, the bottom line with harmonies is where you can only play one note at a time when you're playing your bagpipe solo. You can play multiple notes at a time when you're playing in a group. So if Jim mm-hmm. plays the note A and I play the note C, that is a cool effect.
Yeah.
And then you sort of multiply that across the different tunes that you play, where if other people are playing different notes than the main tune, with a little bit of music theory there to back you up, you can produce some really cool sounding stuff. And harmonies have really progressed a lot in across my career. When I first started, I feel like two notes up, two notes down, see if you can get that to sound good. That's where it started, which is, of course, not quite right. And then what I kind of feel like I've ridden the wave there, where pipers like myself were like, wait a minute, two notes up, two notes down, that doesn't always sound good. What's up with that? And then you'll hear stuff like, you know, then there were people who were maybe ahead of the game. I think that's one of the reasons that Live in Ireland was such an amazing album, is they were doing really interesting stuff and they were ahead of the game. You know, your Bill Livingstons and Bruce Gandys and Michael Grays and these guys, they were ahead of the game. They were like, wait a minute, you know, just do some music theory here and pick your harmony notes based on that. And then you listen to it and it's, well, why does that sound so great? And then, so for me, that was me as a young kid. And then I think this kind of harmony stuff is going to work if you kind of start to learn the music theory. And I remember kind of like picking up on that. And of course, when I did my music degree at SFU, and actually probably before that, when I was starting to do music theory in high school and just the basics, like your basic three note chords, major and minor chords, this, that, and the other thing. And you look at pop music and you see like, oh, pop music uses these four chords basically all the time. I wonder if that's maybe also true for bagpipe tunes. And what you find is, that's basically it. And then if you learn your 1-4-5 and, you know, all that kind of stuff and you apply it to bagpipe music, it's there. It's all there. And what you're seeing now is that's obvious now to most pipers out there writing harmonies. It's obvious. So it's obvious that if you identify the chord progression that fits the tune really well, and then you pick your harmony notes based on that, it's going to sound great. So now we're at this whole different level now where it's just all the harmonies are almost always sounding great at the high levels. And then even in the lower beginning levels, you're hearing some smart stuff going on. You're like, aha, they get it. You know, it's like they pick the right notes there instead of not the wrong notes. It doesn't necessarily sound terrible, but it's just they're not quite understanding it yet, but the information's all there now. It's way different now than it was 20 years ago. Way different.
Do you feel like this is maybe like kind of a symptom of that? You address this in Finding Bagpipe Freedom, that sometimes we have this weird idea that there's a split where it's like there's music, there's all music, all the other instruments and stuff, and then there's bagpipes. Bagpipes are their own thing.
Totally.
And maybe this is part of that. It's like recognizing, no, wait, the same musical principles apply. This is still music too. And then if we just treat it like music, it comes out more musically.
Yes. And all of the bagpipe music that you enjoy, if you were to interview the producers of that music and ask them, is music theory different for pipers than it is for other music? Every last one of the performers that you really enjoy, like what they've done creatively, they'll all tell you like, no, it's basically the same. And maybe there's slight differences, and there are.
There's some
like the bagpipe
there.
There's
for anything.
Yeah, there's slight differences. For example, the bagpipe is a just tuned instrument. So that's a slight different. That's a slight difference. So if you play a bagpipe with an organ, which is an equal tempered instrument, I think, I got to double check my facts there. But let's say you play the bagpipes with a piano, which is an equal tempered instrument. There's going to be a couple of issues that you discover. Like high G's don't sound good with piano G's typically. And that has to do with these slight little differences. And then you have to kind of maybe do a little work around here and there. But the basics are the same. The basics are totally the same. And by the way, with modern technology, you can actually get an electronic piano keyboard to play with just intonation if you really want to. So you can work around it that way too. But that's a bunch of complicated gibberish just to say, yeah, there are some differences. I think the key thing, I was chatting with somebody on one of the Facebook groups about this recently. Like the key thing is the big difference that makes it seem like bagpipes are different than other instruments is that we don't play in accordance with concert pitch, right?
Yeah.
That's the big monkey wrench. So if you can wrap your head around that. So bagpipes are the same as all the other instruments in the world, except we're just not tethered to concert pitch. Like that, the fact that we're not, the fact that our A isn't always at 440 or at 466 or whatever, the mm-hmm. fact that we're not always at that concert pitch number and we can float around, and we do, depending on the environment, well, that makes it much more difficult to tune to other instruments, which leads to mm-hmm. the idea that, oh, we're just different. And we are. We're different in that one respect. But beyond that, it's not a whole lot different. But that also means that chord progressions and the basic rules of counterpoint and like all the all these music theory things, right? It's still true. And it works. Yeah. And it's a huge opportunity. It's a huge opportunity to be creative. All right. Anything else we need to know about making a medley? I think the zoomed out...
There is nothing else we need to know. That's everything.
I think the zoomed out thing that we accidentally stumbled upon at the beginning, I think that's really useful. You know, figure out what's important to you. And for me, those, the three things that we've been working with, I think that basically sums it up for me. I was thinking of it off the cuff. Maybe I'll come up with a fourth bubble at some point. But yeah, what does the judge want? What does the greater audience want? And what do I want? And somewhere in the middle, you know, if you focus on finding that overlap, other all the other decisions tend to come out in the wash. Do we need harmonies at the end of the medley? Well, what does the judge want? Turns out, nowadays, they're expecting that. And the audience wants it, and I want it. So, okay, there should probably be harmonies at the end.
That's an easy yes.
And if the answer is no, it better be a reason that you feel, oh, you know, that you feel gives you greater advantage. But like, it, as it turns out, harmonies at the end of the medley, almost always a yes, because that's what all three bubbles really are kind of craving. So you're going to do that. Are you going to have harmonies in the slow air? Well, it turns out that's what everyone wants. So that sounds good. Are you going to have key changes between the tunes? Well, it turns out the judges like it. The audience likes it. And I don't really care one way or the other, let's say, but I don't mind it. So yeah, probably you're going to be working some key changes in, making sure there's some diversity in the sounds that you're going to make. Am I going to open with a hornpipe? Well, it turns out the judge could care less whether it's a hornpipe or a simple march. They just want to hear something good. And then the audience loves a good hornpipe, I suppose. And I love a good hornpipe, I suppose. But what about like an up-tempo two-four march? Maybe that would really please the judge. Maybe it would satisfy the audience. And I kind of like the challenge, so maybe that's my pick. I don't know.
So there you're, rather than going good choice, bad choice, you're going good choice, better choice.
Right. Tempo is another good one to think, like the tempos that you're going to present. And by the way, this goes to the MSR as well, not just the medley. But think about your three bubbles. You know, the judge might prefer slightly more conservative tempo that's played really, really well.
Yeah.
But maybe not drastically slow. So you can pick your tempos based on that as well. Slower tempos might not satisfy the greater audience that much. And it might not satisfy you, the band, quite as much. Maybe you'd prefer to just rock out at a high tempo.
Sure.
But the judge will definitely reward a band that plays clean. So a slightly more conservative tempo, you might pick that. Or maybe you don't find that. Or maybe gripping it and ripping it is the way to go. You know, because having tried playing more conservatively and trying to get the judge's respect that way, they don't even really notice. So let's just be a little more aggressive on the tempos. Because if it, you know, it fulfills those boxes. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking it through here.
Yeah.
But it's all guided for me from by the big picture stuff, and then it sort of trickles down from there. Hey everybody, Andrew Douglas here from the Piper's Dojo, and I just want to say thanks so much for listening to today's iteration of the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, it would be super helpful to us and to a lot of bagpipers out there trying to find us if you could give us a top-notch review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this podcast, particularly Apple, iTunes, and Spotify and things like that. Your review would be really, really helpful. So if you have a moment today, definitely go over there and help us out. Other than that, until we meet again,
on the podcast or somewhere else. Thanks again for listening.